We got Tom Cotter.
Yes.
Beatles.
Yes, who is the author of...
Tom has done the Hemi in the Barn, the Cobra in the Barn, the Vincent in the Barn.
Right. And now his new book is...
Is TV Tommy Ivo... Oh, you know what? It's a title. It's about Yay Long. It's TV Tommy Ivo, the man, the Hollywood legend, racer. It's about TV Tommy Ivo's racing profession.
And we're going to go to the phones right now and hope that that's Tom on the line. Hi, Tom. You're on with the Motor Mouths.
It's him.
It is.
Excellent. How are you, Tom?
How are you, Tom?
Oh, I was worried. I was ringing the phone, ringing. I said, man, do I have the wrong number?
No. You had the right number. It was just a matter of we all had to run in, scramble in, and put everything, all the discs in the right place. And, you know, hook up the microphones once again and tighten them all down because Joe is having a problem with this. So it was one of those.
We always need a few seconds to get the thing, like, on the ground and actually rolling.
Yes.
We usually start on four flats.
Yeah. Right, hook up the compressor. That's always a chore.
Yeah, this
is so, how you doing? What's going on?
Oh boy! Well, I'm a little pooped. I ran 20 miles this morning, believe it or not. I had to leave early so I could get back in time to talk to you guys. So
what happened? The car break down on you?
Were you running with a gas can?
The Cobra crap out?
The guy was chasing me for 18. No.
Oh.
I'm gonna run a marathon in Washington D.C. in 4 weeks. So this is, you know, just my regimen. So
Tom, I admire you so much because you have the time to do this. That you are amazing that you actually have the time to be a successful author and run a marathon. Just that alone is admirable. Believe me. I mean, when I grow up, I want to be you.
I have no life.
Neither do we.
It revolves around this, which tells you how sad it really is.
Right. And it doesn't involve running.
Right.
Unless Ray is chasing me like he was doing before.
I'll come over there again.
No. You can stay right
here. I like this thing Mike started with me coming on the other side of the bench. See, there's a barrier here. When I go over there, we're in like the same zone.
Yeah, I see him getting ready to jump.
Stay on your side of the bench, Ray.
All right.
So, Tom, you have been busy writing books, haven't you?
Man, I just seem to be cranking them out. I just signed another contract to do another one. But the one that just came out, Ivo, I'm really excited about it. It's literally hitting the stores right now. We're going to do the official introduction of the book in a week and a half at Amelia Island. And Tommy Ivo is going to be there along with his two-engine car, along with his four-engine car. We're going to do book signing. It's going to be really cool.
That sounds fantastic. And that's what the book is about. It's about the biography of TV Tommy Ivo, correct?
Yeah, you know, and I've written, I guess, 9 books now, and to me this is the most important one I've done, and maybe the most important one that I'll ever do, because, you know, just you think about, well, I write about cars or whatever, but this was not about a car, it was about a man, and he gave me his whole life. He's 75 years old now.
Wow.
And he gave me his whole life to write about in, over the course of 2 years, we became friends, and I interviewed him for so many hours, and he gave me, how do I say this? He entrusted me the responsibility of giving his life out to the world in, you know, like a 65,000 word book. So I think that, you know, for me, it's like, wow, what responsibility I have to take this guy's life and condense it down and give it to the world, the public, car enthusiasts, whatever. In a way that they will enjoy it and understand Tommy. So it's a big responsibility. I can't believe how lucky I am that, you know, because he had a lot of guys that wanted to write books about him, and he said, Tom, I want you to do it. And I'm really, really thrilled about that.
I can see, Tom, how you've made that step, that author's step to write, like you said, writing about vehicles and barn finds to an actual human, an individual. It's a big responsibility from what, you know, I can get that from what you're saying. And believe it or not, we kind of feel that way doing this dopey show. When we have people on and we represent people, we feel it's our duty to do it the best way we can and with the most amount of accuracy possible, which is
true.
Suspect.
Very suspect. And we have to let them know beforehand that they're getting on a dopey show. So,
yeah. So Tom, we don't even have a copy of the book yet. So usually I get to read your stuff before we speak to you. So this time we're going blind.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit, if you can encapsulate TV Tommy Ivo's career. I know that's hard to do, but that's all we have time for.
His nickname is because he was a movie star and a TV star. He started at 4 years old. His family was very poor. They grew up in, he grew up in Denver until he was four, and then his mother, because she had such terrible allergies, they had to move to California. Well, he had always loved singing and dancing and do little performances in Denver area. So the mother said, well, maybe he can get into the movies or the show at that time. And so he was on a big, like a Broadway type show as a little guy. And it's interesting, all these little blonde haired boys were lined up for, then they were going to pick one to be in the show. And his mother said, oh God, he just lost his front teeth. He'll never get the show. He'll never get the part. But he got the part because he looked different than every other kid. He had no front teeth. And from that, he, you know, had a, about a 25 year television and movie career that, you know, he played with some of the biggest names in show business at the time, Boris Karloff and Al Hitchcock and Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin. And, you know, it was onesie twosie, and then he got a television show called The Margie Show. You know, pretty amazing career before he ever got into cars. You know, he was, he started to make a little bit of money, when he was, you know, 10, 12 years old, so, and his parents were still poor. They didn't take any of his money. All the money he made was his money.
That's
and
great.
At 12 years old, his mother said, we really would like to have a house. And, you know, they lived in these rat-infested apartments. And she said, you know what, if you would buy us a house that we would all live in, we'd really appreciate it. And so he bought, in, as a 12-year-old boy, he bought a house in Burbank, California.
Wow.
And, you know, it was just a humble little house, $12,000. And here he is, 75 years old, still lives in the same house.
Wow.
And, you know, so I don't know if he's the longest owner of an original, you know, original owner of a house in the world, but he might be.
Well, from 12, yeah.
And all the cars he built, the single-engine cars, the twin-engine cars, the four-engine cars, the jet cars, the top fuel dragsters, all those trailers that had glass sides on them,
right.
He built them right in the driveway of that house.
So, Tom, how did Tommy make the transition from the TV and the acting stuff into drag racing? How did he? What was the spark that got that ignited him into that profession?
Well, when he was 16, he always looked young for his age. So when he was 16, he looked like he was 12. He wanted to, you know, he had a girlfriend across the street. They'd ride their bicycles down to all the car dealerships, and he said, "I want to buy a car." So they'd go to the Ford dealerships, the Pontiac dealerships, the Buick dealerships, whatever, and then they'd lie on the floor of her living room and spread all the brochures out, and they decided together that the Buick, 53 Buick was the best-looking car. So he bought a 53 Buick. He walked into the showroom, and he's just a little kid walking in the showroom, the salesman thought, and he goes over to this car and starts beeping the horn. The salesman comes over and says, "What the hell are you doing?" And he says, "I want to buy it." He says, "Yeah, sure." And Ivo whipped out the cash and bought it cash.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah.
So at 16 years old, he had a brand-new Buick. And he took it to his friend said, "Hey, you want to go to the drag?" And I just said, "What's the drag?" And he said, "Ah, come on, you get to race your car." So he goes there, and it was an automatic. It was a nailhead Buick. No, I'm sorry, it was a straight eight Buick.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a quarter mile in 66.66 miles an hour. and then, you know, he said that he had to come back around and get on the line and do it again. And he went 66.66 miles an hour again. He said, "What's so great about this? I go faster than that on the road." So he kind of canned it. He started to modify his car as a custom car, almost like a George Barris car. He tunneled the headlights, Frenched them, and took off all the chrome and lowered it and made it a really cool looking Buick. Then he got another Buick with a nailhead V8 and as a Century, and he took that to the drag strip. And he won top eliminator for a stock sedan, and he said, "I like it." And that's what started. So he was an actor that drag raced, and little by little, you know, his drag racing became, you know, more, how do I say, more prosperous for him, not in the way of earning money, but wins. And he started to think, like, wow, I'd like this more than acting. And he was still acting, but, you know, it was when he built his T-Bucket that that he really started to win, and that's when he started to think, you know, I don't need to be acting much anymore.
Tom, what were the cars? What was the mythology? How did he rise through the ranks from a regular street car to a top fuel car? Because obviously, guys spend many, many years in their career. Some of them never attain that.
Right.
You know, did he stop at all the normal stops along the way that you would have back then, or did he kind of just leapfrog some of them?
Well, you know, the rumor is that he was a millionaire, and you know, he was not a millionaire. He said, you know, I did a part in a movie, and I made $400. And this would be in, you know, the early mid-50s. He said, but then I wouldn't get another part for three months or something. So he figures that he made about $100,000 total in his new movie career.
Oh, wow.
He made a lot more than that as a drag racer. But you know, there was a mystique about Tommy Iovo. He was a TV star. You could turn on the TV and see him. You know, there was a rumor that his father was a big shot with Buick. There was a rumor that he was a millionaire. Well, it was all not correct. So he raced this Buick, 55 Buick Century, and he said, I want to build a car to drag race. So he went out to the desert and found a Model T touring car body that had a yucca tree, mm-hmm. rolling through it. He had to go cut the tree down. He got this body home. It had a Model T frame. He boxed it. He put a nailhead Buick in it, just like he had in the Century, which had real small valves, and he put a three-speed Cadillac LaSalle transmission, and took it to the drag strip. It had a four-barrel, and he won Top Eliminator, Top Eliminator at Lyons Dragway.
Wow.
Really cool-looking car. Then he started to modify it little by little. He put 6 1-barrels, then he tried Hillborn fuel injection, and he put slicks on the back, and he took off the windshield. You know, all to give it better aerodynamics, and he wound up winning like crazy.
Wow.
And so then he said, you know what? I'm driving this car here, winning, and I'm driving it home. What if I build a dragster?
So oh, okay.
He got a dragster, one of the very first dragsters, an 88-inch long wheelbase, a real short compared to today's 300.
That's the short slingshot style.
Right, exactly. And he put the nailhead Buick in there, and he would race against Hemis. And he said the Hemis, you know, they all had three-speed transmissions. He would start off in second gear with this nail head with real small valves, and it never really had a lot of torque. But the Hemis would sit there screaming, the tires spinning away, and he'd already be three-quarters of the way down the drag strip.
That's the key.
And because he had such good reaction timing, that the Hemis would come screaming up on him, but he'd already be at the finish line.
Yeah.
So that was the secret to success was... He's nailhead
Buick. It still is. You beat your opponent at the light. You know, that's if you cut the right light, you cut the right tree, and your 60 foot is good, that's usually, you know, a good determinant that the odds are in your favor, you're going to win. So, Tom, I'm sure you have pictures of all this stuff in the book, which I can't wait to see.
Hundreds of pictures.
What did you have to leave out?
I don't think I left out anything.
Really? Oh, you got it all in? Okay, because I figured there was so much, I figured there would be a lot more that you couldn't have put in. It's, you know, usually that's the way it works. Like with us around here, there's always so much more that gets left out, but you have to make the decision.
And I got stories about his, you know, his family, you know, his brother got killed in a car accident when he was a little, Tommy was a little guy, about his parents, you know, his parents came from Europe. He's not a very stereotypical, you know, California drag race guy. His parents from Europe. They grew up really poor. He just fell in love with this thing. And exactly at the time, if you remember, there's a very famous front cover of Hot Rod magazine in 1960 or 61. He had a four-engine dragster on the show of the Margie set, and his co-star Margie. And, you know, he's wearing a striped jacket and a straw hat, and here's this monster car. And all the producers came down and said, what the hell is this? He said, where's my drag car? And they thought he was drag racing like a Cadillac. And they said, oh, no, you're not. And they went upstairs and changed his contract. No more drag racing. So for 2 years, he had to give up drag racing. Actually, Don Prudhomme, who was his tire wiper, pit boy, took over the driving responsibilities of that four-engine car while Tommy fulfilled his contract. When the Margie show was canceled, he said, yippee! And he hit the road.
See you, Margie.
And he hit the road every March and come back home in November.
Great.
Wow, son of a gun. Tom, can we take a break and bring you back in about a minute?
Sure.
All righty.
Hang tough.
Yeah, we've got to do a little stuff here. Tom Cotter, the author of the bio of TV Tommy Ivo. What is the real name? It's not Tommy Ivo in the barn, I'm assuming.
No, it's TV Tommy Ivo, drag racing master showman.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All righty. We come back more with Tom Cotter right here at Motormouth Radio. Ray Guarino and Joe D. I'm Chris Switzer. Keep it where you got it.
The Motormouths will be right back with your car questions. Give us a call at 516-572-7440.
Hi, I'm Emmitt Smith. Sports has given me a lot to smile about over the years. But as an athlete and the father of young athletes, I know how important it is to protect yourself from injury. That's why I've teamed up with the American Association of Orthodontists to encourage athletes to play it safe. I've seen firsthand how quickly an accident can happen when out on the field, the court, or even the dance floor. Wearing protective gear like mouth guards, face masks, and helmets can reduce the risk of injury and keep you in the game. Visit braces.org.
Your car not running right? Let the Motormouths help you out at 516-572-7440.
Welcome back to Motormouth Radio, where we have the author of TV Tommy Ivo, Tom Cotter, on the phone with us. And, of course, Ray Guarino, Joe D. in the studio.
Hi there.
and Tom. So, Tom, TV Tommy Ivo raced against what drag racers? What people did he go up against during his career?
You know, he's credited with being the first guy to become a professional drag racer. When guys were, you know, building rails out of junkyard parts with junkyard engines and old steel wheels and just welding together scrap iron, he was, you know, running cars with candy apple paint jobs and Hallebrand wheels and, you know, just incredible works of art. But he took it to the next level as far as car preparation. And then other guys are just running, and they might get a case of oil if they, you know, if they won. But he hit the road in March of every year for about 20 years and didn't get back to California until November. And he, instead of running NHRA or AHRA or IHRA or NASCAR's drag racing series, he didn't care. He didn't care about running for points. He ran for money. So he'd go and run every little podunk drag strip in the country. He set up a whole year's worth of appearances. This is prior to the interstate highway system. And he'd tow behind his Cadillac. He had various Cadillacs that he'd tow behind. And he'd pull into town a Cadillac with a dragster, and he'd hand the local TV stations clips, film clips of, hey, this movie star, you know, kind of guy. And he said, I'll take on any local racer. And he'd race local guys, and he'd run for like $1,000. Didn't matter, you know, if he won or lost, whatever, he'd get $1,000 appearance fee. And that's where he started to make money in his career, in his life. Much more so than being a TV star. And then he saw the match race guys like Don Garlitz, like Shirley Muldowney, like Don Prudhomme, when Prudhomme had his own car. The people who were the drag racing legends of, you know, the 60s and 70s, they all raced against Ivo. And, you know, but he was the guy that was making money. Other
right.
people, you know, they'd go run for points, but NHRA didn't pay for any. Like, in other words, you could win the championship, you didn't get any money. Ivo would come out of the season with $100,000, and he'd take that money, get back home in November, he'd go to his garage, two-car garage in Burbank, California, and start building another car. Sell the car off that he had, start building another car, he'd finish it by March, and hit the road again.
Mm.
He'd go to Canada, he'd go to the, mostly on the East Coast.
I was going to ask you, Tom, how much action did he have out here on the East Coast?
He mostly ran on the East Coast.
Mostly? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, the Midwest and the East Coast, that was Ivo's playground because, you know, he was the consummate drag racer from the West Coast. Everybody on the East Coast, and I was one of them, and I guess you guys were too. You know, California had, you know, good-looking chicks, Coors beer, and bitchin' hot rods.
Sure.
And so he represented this, you know, this California lifestyle. And the East Coast guys, you know, were infatuated with his Cadillac, tow car, his incredible race cars, the movie star, And he was towing into, like, you know, West Hampton drag strip. I live in North Carolina. He towed into Concord, North Carolina. He towed into, like, little podunk tracks up in Canada, down in Florida, Pennsylvania, lots of stuff in New Jersey. You know, he was mostly racing on this side of the country.
Hmm. And he was the one that pretty much invented style for the drag racer, I would assume, right?
Oh, he built such beautiful cars. I mean, they were, you know, I've seen some of them now. I've gone out to the Hot Rod Reunion at Bakersfield, and there are restored cars of Tommy's. Oh, my God, they're really works of art. He had chrome plating on them, like I said, polished magnesium Hallibrands, you know, and trailers. You know, he didn't haul around on an open trailer once he started to really pick up a name and a reputation. His top fuel cars would be in a glass-sided trailer so that he could ride down the road, and he was still showing off his car. People could, you know, kids in a car next to him riding down the road, look at Dad, you know, there's a top fuel car. So he was the guy that really brought, he took show business from Hollywood, which he knew well, and brought it to drag racing. And it's made him, you know, an icon in our sport.
I got to say, he was probably a bit of a daredevil, too, because to take a car that's that beautiful in a glass-enclosed trailer and park it somewhere, that's almost asking for trouble in some towns, especially small towns where there's, you know, one local sheriff.
And he used real glass, too. This was three-eighths-inch real pane glass.
Wow.
He only broke one once when a rear end he had wasn't fastened down inside the car and banged against the glass.
Wow.
but he played hard. He's the consummate practical joker.
Oh, yeah?
And they played rough.
What'd they do?
You got 3 hours?
No, actually, we're going to look forward to reading the book.
Yeah. Well, give us one or two.
What's that?
Give us a couple that you know that are, like, over the top. Something that he's done and a practical joke that he's pulled.
Well, you know, over the top on his side, I mean, he would always, he belonged to the Road Kings Car Club in Burbank, California, and there was a real wicked initiation, and he was in charge of initiation. So this kid named Don Prudhomme, who was 19, wanted to join the Road Kings, they'd go cruising every once a week to the Bob's Big Boy cruise in there and have burgers and shakes. Well, Prudhomme had to go crawling into the restaurant wearing nothing but a diaper, and he had a bottle in his hand, and he had to go crawling up to the counter and ask for milk. Now, these guys who he played practical jokes on, they wanted to get back to him.
Yeah, I believe it.
I remember... Tom McEwen told me one day Ivo was sleeping in his bedroom at the hotel where at the drag strip they were running at, and he and Prudhomme kicked the door in the hotel and threw 5 gallons of waste oil on him in the bed, and then then they had pillows that they broke open and they, like, it feathered him. What a mess.
So what
smelled good too?
Yeah, I'm
see
sure.
How good see how good the hotel soap is.
Oh man! So what did Tommy do?
Well, you know, he got them back the next time. He would sneak into guys' rooms and take all their clothes and put them in the bathtub and all their clothes for 3 months. He'd be on the road. He'd throw their clothes in the bathtub and get them all soap and wet. You know, and then these guys are like, oh crap! Now what do I do? they played really, really hard, and so I've got about 50 practical jokes in this book and little sidebars all about Ivo's practical joking. You know, he was famous for it. A lot of people didn't like him, including Prudhomme and Garlitz for a long time.
I gotta say one thing: Chris is a guy who couldn't have gone on the road with TV Tommy Ivo.
No.
Probably me neither.
Well, I only have one pair of pants, so wouldn't have been better. Wouldn't have gotten another pair of pants. No big deal.
Yeah. I got that recessive gene where I get pranked bad enough, I just lash back like with, you know, 50 caliber.
It
gets ugly fast.
Right. We're not practical jokers, but we do like hearing the stories.
Oh, definitely.
So we clarify that right there. What gave you the inspiration, Tom, to actually sit down and write this book? What was, did you actually, like, have the meeting with Tommy Ivo in a diner or something and say, because I know you do a lot of good, of your best work in diners.
Over pancakes.
Right. Is that what happened? Food. Did you sit down with him?
I was at the NHRA Museum in Pomona, and I was signing a book. I did a biography on Dean Jeffries, the customizer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing this. It was during the Grand National Roadster Show weekend, and I'm doing this book signing there. And
yes, we remember the book. It was Dean Jeffries in a barn. No, I'm sorry. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's going to be Chris Switzer in a barn when he's done with you. You watch. And they're not going to find you.
Go ahead.
So, under the barn.
Really, the NHRA Museum, the Wally Parks NHRA Museum, it's a really a cool place. And it was during the L.A. Roadster Show, and, you know, there's thousands of people. And I'm doing a book signing inside the museum with Dean next to me. And the four-engine Ivo car just happened to be sitting next to me.
Wow.
So this well-known hot rodder in California, his name is Bruce Myers, a friend of mine, and he's got killer hot rods and race cars and classic, and he's got all the great cars. He says to me, "What are you going to do next?" And I looked over at the four-engine car and said, "I'd like to do this guy." And he said, "I can make that happen. Ivo's a friend of mine." And like a week later, Ivo calls me up, and, you know, we started talking on the phone, and I went out to meet him, and he says, "You're my guy." So,
wow.
Nice. I love when contacts work like that.
Yeah. That is amazing.
Man. Yeah. So I'm so thrilled. I could talk all day about this guy because, you know, I've become friends with a hero of mine from when I was a kid. You know, my friend, you know, Buzzy Bristol and I, we went to Sachem High School out in Ronkonkoma, and we'd, you know, have Hot Rod Magazine and Car Quest, CarCraft and stuff, and we'd look at these pictures of this clean-cut guy with blonde hair, smiling, with a nice, clean T-shirt, and he was like, you know, the epitome of a California drag racer. And and I got to become friends with this guy 40 years later.
How does he look now?
He looks pretty good. I saw a picture of him with George Snizek. Yeah. Scott sent that over to me last night. And he doesn't look his age. He looks a lot younger, although you could tell he's a grown man.
Right.
But I think he still looks fine. Looks great.
Yeah, and
does George.
Blonde hair, and he's still got that big famous smile.
Right. Amazing. You know, I'll tell you, Tom, that's nice. You're on a plateau maybe a little further advanced from us, but we get to do that too, and that's what really makes this show fulfilling. Case in point, next Sunday, I'll foreshadow the show a little bit. In fact, I'll just tell you what we're doing. We're having two local legends, Coney Island Ralph Landolfi and Richie Zuhl, in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys are also East Coast, but, you know, guys that just didn't... Well, Zuhl went a little further, I think. Ralph stayed much more local.
But they were definitely a force to be reckoned with on the drag
side. Oh, absolutely. The guys to beat. And it's just a thrill for us to be able to finally meet these guys and say, you know, how are you and what's going on? We've had Ralph on the show once before, but it is nice when that kind of comes together. It gives it purpose.
Tom, can we leave you on for another commercial break?
Sure.
Awesome. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Tom Cotter, author of the bio of TV Tommy Ivo. It's tough when you got two Toms that you're talking about. One's on the phone. That's Ray Guarino. I'm Chris Switzer. Of course, Joe D is with us here in the studio, and a lot more of Motormouth Radio to come.
Got a car question? Give the Motormouths a call at 516-572-7440.
Let's face it, in life, there is no free lunch.
Are you prepared? Do you have a plan? Who can you trust?
You can trust the NFCC, the nation's largest nonprofit network of credit counseling and financial education organizations. Our certified professionals will help you learn basic financial skills and give you the tools to meet financial challenges with confidence. Come learn with us at nfcc.org.
It's your money. Get smart about it.
A public service from the NFCC.
Got a car question? Give the Motormouths a call at 516-572-7440.
All righty, we're back with Tom Cotter, the author of the biography of TV Tommy Ivo. And he's on the phone with us along with Joe D. Ray Guarino here at Motormouth Radio. I'm Chris Switzer, and a load of music. Tom, how did Tommy Ivo's career end? Like, what was the deciding factor there?
You know, it was a convergence of things. He was the first guy that was professional drag racer making money from drag racing cars when everybody else was scratching their head saying, how does he do that? Eventually, you know, drag racing started to pay money for points. NHRA started to pay money for year-end points. And I just said, screw that. I don't need that stuff. All that drag racing point stuff is going on the West Coast. I'm making all my money on the East Coast. I don't have to go back there. So he let guys like Tom McEwen, Don Prudhomme, Don Garlick, those guys run for points. Ultimately, those guys started to really build up a national following. NHRA became more professional. And Iva was still running these little podunk tracks around the country. So the sport kind of started to pass him by. And, you know, so he decided, well, I'm gonna retire. He went through, you know, top fuel cars, front engine cars, rear engine cars, then he went to funny cars, and then he went to jet cars. And right around the, you know, he got almost pretty badly hurt. He broke some vertebrae in a jet car, and he said, you know, it's probably time that I start thinking about retiring. It's getting dangerous. I'm getting old. So he was going to do a retirement tour.
What year was this, Tom? I'm sorry.
This would have been in the mid-70s,
okay.
late-70s. And he bought his four-engine car back. And by this time, it had had a station wagon body put on it. He had a four-engine dragster. And when he sold it, the guy that bought it next, Tom McCurry, put a Buick station wagon body on it and called it the Wagon Master. So Ivo bought it back, changed all the colors of it, made it his car again. And he said, I'm going to go around to all the little circuits that I've been going to for the last 20 years, and I'm going to say goodbye to my fans. I'm going to do a full year retirement tour, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to start a drag racing team, and I'm going to be the team owner, just like, you know, a lot of these other guys did, and I'm going to hire a young driver. Well, he goes out and sets up a whole year's worth of appointments, shows, and he goes to this little drag strip up in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada, and it had frost heaves, you know, the undulations in the pavement because of the severe temperatures and snow and stuff. So it was early in the season, and this car was so low to the ground, and he goes blasting down the track. It's only his third show of like 150 show a year, and the car bottoms out, four-engine car bottoms out, and he breaks his back, and that was the end of his career.
Wow. Well done, yeah.
Holy moly.
You know, that's a sad way to go.
Sad way to go, but he fulfilled every one of those dates. He had to hire a driver, and he would go out and represent the car, Tommy Ivo's drag car, with another driver, his sign autograph, to do the interviews and all that stuff. The only time he drove after that, a dragster, he was the stunt double in the movie Heart Like a Wheel about Shirley Muldowney. Ooh. Ivo was a small guy. He could fit in Shirley's car. And so because she was out drag racing and he was retired and he knew about the movie business,
right.
You know, he was the stunt double, so he
does cool.
I saw some pictures of him with he didn't want me to use these pictures. He was in a pink dress.
Pink suit. Yeah. And a wig, yeah.
And a Shirley wig.
Well, hey. Oh, that's, you know, but that shows the mettle of the man and the class act that he is. If he would stand behind those 150 dates and show up, I'm sure, right. And most times in a lot of pain.
And he's definitely the guy that would be the go-to guy for a stunt double for a movie about drag racing.
That was a great opportunity.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, very cool.
He's driving this top fuel car, and he had it was about a 1,500-pound car, and it had 1,500 pounds of cameras and recording equipment on it, so it weighed 3,000 pounds.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a real handful.
Right.
But, you know, then he got into businesses. He got into the moving and storage business. He got into auto repair shop or whatever, but he tried to get out of that. He didn't like that. And really, his career has taken off again in the last 10 years when, you know, this whole nostalgia thing. Now, I'm going to tell you how... I was in 2000, NASCAR hired my agency, the Cotter Group, to represent them. It's called NASCAR 2000.
Okay.
And one of the programs we did was out in Hollywood called Hollywood Salutes NASCAR. And it was, you know, a bunch of Jan and Dean and the Beach Boys singing about NASCAR, and all the drivers were out there. It was at the Wilshire Theater in Hollywood. And so the night before that, my agency, a couple of guys and I, we went to dinner at a place called the Stinking Rose. This is 11 years ago, 12 years ago. And it's a famous garlic restaurant in California. So I'm sitting there at the table, and one of the guys that works for me, David Hart, says, look at that guy over at that table over there. I says, yeah. He said, that's Tommy Ivo. I look over. I said, no way. That's an old man. Ivo's a young guy. He said, no, think about it. Ivo's not a young guy anymore.
Right.
And I look, and I see that smile. He's with a woman. I said, you're right. So I kept eating, and when Ivo got up to go to the bathroom, I said, excuse me, ma'am, is that Tommy Ivo? And she says, oh, yes, it is. That's my husband. And he doesn't think anybody remembers him. Please talk to him. And he came back to the table, and I waited a couple minutes, and I went over to him, and I said, excuse me, are you Tommy Ivo? And that big grin opened up, you know. And he says, well, yes, I am. I said, you know what? I've had a question in my mind since I'm 12 years old about one of your cars. Can you help me? He said, sure. I said, how did you hook up the four engines to work with the dual differentials, front and back and stuff? So he takes out a napkin and a pen and he starts drawing these, you know.
Oh, wow.
I always wondered that myself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he told me that two engines on the left side worked the front differential. They both faced backwards. And the two on the right side faced conventionally, and they worked the rear differential, made it four-wheel drive. And he drew this all out. And I said, oh, my God, I can't believe that was Tommy Ivo. So, and then, you know, 10, 11 years later, I knock on his door. I said, Tommy, I'd like to do a book about you. And he said he remembers me at the restaurant. I'm sure he doesn't. But that was when his career was just starting to, you know, the whole nostalgia thing with diecast cars and stuff was just starting to happen.
Tom, nice. What did you do with the napkin?
Yeah, did you get to keep it?
I blew my nose in it and threw it away. I don't know.
Because I figured you'd show him the napkin with a whole bunch of boogers on it.
That's a nice thing to have. That's a piece of memorabilia.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't even remember taking it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah,
I
he might have just...
I was more curious about how it worked than having a souvenir, you know?
Oh, that is amazing. So now, what's next on the card for Tom Cotter? What's the next book?
Well, I just signed a contract, and I'm starting a book this week. The motorcycle book I did called The Vincent in the Barn has been the best-selling in the barn book I've had. So I'm going to do another motorcycle book called The Harley in the Barn, a collection of 40 stories on motorcycle archaeology.
Amazing.
And then I'm working on a book on rock and roll guys that are car guys.
Oh, cool.
And I've already spent a couple of days with Jay Giles up in Massachusetts.
Car guy.
Who's a serious Ferrari and Maserati enthusiast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he built his own V12 engine. And Brian Johnson from AC/DC, lead singer, spent time with him down in Sarasota, Florida. I'm going to try to spend time with Bon Jovi, Bruce Springsteen, Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, Nick Mason, Mike Hetfield.
Oh, yeah.
Metallica. Billy Gibbons.
Oh, yeah. All Reverend Bill.
There we go.
Tom, I'm telling you, I'm going to write a book about you.
Writing a book about writing books.
Yeah, right, exactly. And the life that you lead. You don't have no life. You have the greatest life there is. That is awesome. I am amazed.
Well, thanks.
Get me back on the air soon because I've got a new barn find I got to tell you guys about.
All right.
Oh, we'd love to.
We'll schedule it in. And thank you for calling us today. We appreciate your time, Tom, and telling us about the TV Tommy Ivo book. We look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, great All stories. Right.
Tom, thank you so much.
Have a good week, guys.
All righty. So long.
You too. Take care. Tom Cotter, the author of TV Tommy Ivo's biography. That's going to be quite a book.
Right. Oh, yeah. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. See it. Read it.
Now you
see the book. Hear the book. Read the book.
Right.
I'll wait for the movie to come out.
Get it on Kindle.